We want to thank Gil and Rebecca Feldman for sponsoring today's Parsha class, even though really it's a Megillah class. And usually it's a women's class, but it's open to everybody today in preparation for Shavuos. And they're sponsoring in loving memory of Rebecca's grandfather, Rav Reuven ben Tzvi Hirsch Bodek, for his 10th Yahrzeit. So we are learning L'ilui Nishmaso. Hopefully our learning together will be an elevation for his soul. So thank you to the Feldmans for that sponsorship. And Mirtz Hashem, we should continue at least here and continue learning, maybe hopefully soon in person. We'll have to wait and see about that. So, as I said before, we have a very... I'm going to, first of all, mute everyone. Not because I don't want to hear you talk, but just because people might want to hear me talk. And if you have anything to say, so just pipe up. And you can chime in. The class today is not really Parsha, first of all, because it was requested that we do Megillat Rut, to learn about Rus a little bit. And secondly, because there's no Parsha this week. I believe, if not mistaken, I don't know if people have relatives in Israel, I believe they're going to be ahead of us after this week. Is that going to happen? Yeah? Presumably that's going to happen. And I believe we catch up only... Matos Mase is usually when we catch up. So it'll be... what? I believe we'll catch up Matos Mase. And we have the opportunity to learn Rus because there's no Parsha, but also because we want to prepare for Shavuos. And when we talk about Shavuos, we have to also understand that the minhag of laning Rus on Shavuos was not always so clear, not always so worldwide or unanimous of a minhag. And in order to really understand how it sort of got pushed over the threshold, it sort of became now a universal minhag, we have to sort of reach back and try to understand why it is that Rus would be something we read on Shavuos anyway. And I'm sure some people already have an idea about why that could be, but let's sort of eke out some of the themes from the story itself, and then hopefully we'll be able to come to a better understanding and some kind of preparation for Shavuos. So you'll find here on your source sheets, if you don't have a source sheet, we'll say it outside also, but you'll find here on the sources the title here, A Conversion in Contrast. We'll see what that means soon. The story of Rus is an interesting story. For a lot of reasons, a lot of things to sort of to focus in on. I just watched a very intriguing video from Rabbi David Foreman. If people are familiar with Rabbi David Foreman, very interesting way to look at things, and very very sort of new, different type of way to look at it. You can find it on his website, Aleph Beta. Aleph Beta is right now during quarantine is actually he's allowing everyone to watch for free. So take advantage. Very good website, not just for us but for other things too. And the story of Rus is somewhat ambiguous because every theme that you sort of pin to it for its possible lesson for Shavuos is also something which can be sort of, you know, undone or disproven in one way or another. But the general story we hopefully we're familiar with, Rus, the daughter-in-law of a woman named Naomi, and Naomi is... unfortunately widowed, and then Naomi and Orpah are also widowed, and then ultimately the question becomes, what are they going to do? So we know the beginning of the story says that Naomi tells her daughters-in-law, right, to Rus and to Orpah, to say, she says to them, go back to your mom. You know, I love my daughter-in-laws, but, you know, daughters-in-law, but this is the time for you, go back to your mother, and sort of try to get somebody else, try to get another husband from there. And as we know the story, Orpah goes back. If you look here at the first source, so she says to them, that each of you should go to your mother's house. Hashem will deal nicely with you, just like He dealt nicely with you with these first husbands, meaning you'll get remarried somehow. So the pasuk then says later, a few pasukim later, Vatisana kolan vativkana od, they cried together, Vatishak arpa l'chamosa, Arpa kisses Naomi, Verus dav kaba, and Ruth stayed clinging to Naomi, right? So basically, Arpa leaves, and Naomi says, "Vatomer hine shava yivim teich el ama v'al Eloheha," right? That she, Arpa, is going back to her nation with their gods, lowercase g. Shuv yachra yivim teich, go after your sister-in-law. Interesting word that it comes from that same kind of phrase, which is also a central theme in the story. Vatomer Rus al tifki bi. So Rus says to Naomi, don't bother me like this. I don't know how do they translate it here. Do not urge me. Tifka means to hurt even. But either way, la'azvech la'shuv me'acharayach, that I should leave from your presence. Ki el asher telchi eleich. Because to wherever you're going, I will go. Uva asher talini alin, and wherever you will lie down, I will lie down. Amech ami, your nation is my nation. Ve'elokayach elokai, and your God is my God. Now this, as we know, is a central pasuk in the Megillah, because it basically says that Ruth is accepting Hashem. She's accepting Judaism. As we know, she is converting at this point. How exactly, with all the background, we don't really know all the details. But this is sort of the pasuk many people focus on to understand how Rus was really converting. Basher tamus yamus, wherever you're going to die, I'm going to die. B'shamek haver, now it's horribly buried. Ko yaseh Hashem li v'chol yosif. Ki amavis avrid ben yuvenecha. Because the only thing that's going to separate us from each other is death itself. So a very emotional commitment, devotion from Rus here. And this is really where some people point to as being the sort of the climax of the story. The strange part of the story, obviously, if this were to be the climax, is this is only 17 psukim in, right? This is the 17th verse of the Megillah. So whatever lesson we're going to draw out from this is not going to fully understand or not going to fully explain what the purpose of Rus, of reading Megillas Rus on Shavuos is, although I think it does give us a sort of a deeper, richer understanding of what's going on. So the truth is that this question about why we read Rus is really only the second question we have to ask. The first question we have to ask is, why is the story of Rus in Tanakh at all? Because as we know, there are many stories that happen in the history of the Jewish people. Some of them are recorded, and some of them are not recorded, right? People oftentimes ask, what about the Book of the Maccabees? Why don't we have the Book of the Maccabees in the Tanakh, right? It didn't make the cut. And the Gemara talks about other books that didn't make the cut, Ben Sura and things like that. Ben Sira, I think it's Ben Sira. But either way, so the question is, why? What makes the cut, what doesn't make the cut? The Gemara in Megillah talks about, how Shir Hashirim wasn't going to make the cut, Rabbi Akiva kept it in, things like that. And every book has its own reason. If you look at source number 2, it actually addresses this explicitly. So the Midrash tells us, the rabbis explain, Yas Hashem imachem chesed. Hashem will do with you kindness, right? This is what the pasuk Naomi says to Arpa and to Rus, to tell them to go back to their homeland. Hashem's going to be kind to you. Now, the truth is that Rus didn't listen to this, right? Arpa listened to this. Naomi is saying these words as if it's going to be some kind of, self-fulfilling prophecy that Hashem will actually do kindness to them, regardless of what they do. Because as the Midrash is about to explain, this kindness is not contingent on her actually listening, right? It's as if Naomi is saying, go back to your land and Hashem's going to do kindness, which sounds as if you don't go back to your land, he won't do kindness with you. But look how Chazal actually explained this pasuk. Rabbi Chanina bar Ada Amar Yasek Siv. It says he will do, right? If you look at the actual text in the first source, so the second line has the word Yaaseh, but we say Yaas, that he has done. So either way, so he says Yaaseh Siv Kasher Asisam Im Hamesim Shenit Paltem Betachri Chehon. You have dealt with their burial shrouds, meaning you took care of your husband's burial necessities, and you took care of Misha Vitrulak Subosehen, because they renounced their ksubas. Okay, whatever that means. It's an interesting take on what exactly they did with the dead means. But then Rabbi Zeira comes along. Rabbi Zeira asks a question which is a sort of foundational question you don't necessarily find in the middle of a midrash explaining a pasuk. Usually when you find a foundational you know, sort of an underpinning, you know, simple question, such like this one, it's usually at the beginning, at the introduction of the Midrash, at the introduction of the Sefer. Here, it's a few psukim in, and he asks the following question. Megillah zu, ein ba. There's nothing in this Megillah about Tuma, Velotara. It's not talking about the laws of purity or the laws of impurity. Lo Isser, Lo Heter. It's not talking about prohibitions. It's not talking about mitzvos, I guess, or what is mutter. Velama nichtafa. Why is it written at all? What is the purpose of this Megillah? So it's interesting what the other two possibilities were that we learned from it. It's either Isser v'Heter or Tuma and Tara. There are a lot of other things that could learn from it also. Shir Hashirim doesn't have Isser v'Heter or Tuma and Tara either, right? You know, Kohelis doesn't have anything about that either. Mishle, Tehillim, like none of those have. I mean, we learn things from them. And just like we learn from the things from the Megillah of Rus. Either way, it's an interesting assumption, or what we would call a havamina, that would be the barometer, that would be the threshold of what's considered canonized in the Tanakh. But either way, he says, so why is it written? L'lamedcha kama sachar tov l'golnei chasadim. It's written in order to teach us the reward for those who are gomel chesed, the reward for those who act with kindness. So this is the Eira's opinion as to why Rus is even in Tanakh in the first place. Because a person who does chesed is greatly rewarded. Now one could say, did we not know that already? Or are there not other stories about, you know, rewarding kindness? That's Rebbe Zeira's take on why Rus is so important. The reason that's interesting is, it sounds as if, based on the placement of this phrasing, it sounds as if Rebbe Zeira is darshening this from this pasuk. Right? Yas Hashem imachem chesed. Hashem will deal with you kindly. Ka'asher asisem im hamesim. Just like you dealt kindly with those who were deceased. Now, as I said before, Naomi is guaranteeing this to Rus if she goes back, right? She says, go back to your mother's home and Hashem will deal kindly with you because you dealt kindly with the deceased. So it sounds as if the guarantee of Naomi is Hashem will deal kindly with you if you go home. If you stay with me, he's not necessarily going to deal kindly with you. But nonetheless, Rebbe Zeira comes along and says, this statement from Naomi actually becomes the truth. It becomes the truth regardless of the fact that she doesn't go back. Hashem will do kindness with you regardless, right? It's basically saying, and this is true in other times during Tanakh also, that when a tzaddik or a navi says something, so it happens regardless of what their intentions are. Right, so here she's saying that Yas Hashem Yimacham Chesed, Hashem will do Chesed with you wherever you are. Right, regardless of Naomi, when Naomi said it, she might go home, but regardless of what's going to happen, Hashem's going to do kindness with you. And this is part of the reason why some people say that there's a reason to read it also on Shavuos, because of the kindness that's involved in the story, and that is something which we also find in the Sukkim that talk about Shavuos. It's all about the harvest season, and it's all about making sure that the people who maybe don't have the resources that you do can still get part of your harvest. You're right, Leket, Shicha, and Peah are all part of the Psukim in Emor. Right? I gave a Torah about this a few weeks ago. The Psukim in Emor, which talk about Pesach and Shavuos, are interrupted by this phrasing of Ubekitzrachem is Katsir Artzacha. When you do your harvest, make sure you give to other people. A famous Rashi that we talked about, fine. So that's what some people explain as the purpose of not only why we read on Shavuos, but why it's in the Tanakh in the first place. As Rebbe Zeira is saying, is because of kindness. But there's a more, probably I would say, a more popular reason, which we've already alluded to, and that is the concept of conversion. Right? If you look back at the Pasuk, so the Pasuk that Rus says to Naomi, in 16, I'm going to walk where you walk, I'm going to sleep where you sleep, your nation is my nation, your God is my God, wherever you die, I'm going to die, and that's where I'm going to be buried. Why does Rus feel the need to go through all these different steps? Just tell us, I'm going with you, I'm not leaving. Right, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty simple to just say I'm staying with you. Like, why does she go through all these different stages? So Rashi, quoting, I believe, from a Gemara. Where does he get this from? Let me just check for a second. This is on Tezayin. Rashi Tezayin. Yeah, Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos. Gemara in Yevamos tells us that the following drasha based on Rus. This is as opposed to Rabbi Zeira that said that that we don't learn any halacha from it. This is a real halacha we learn from Rus. So Rashi tells us, quoting from the Gemara in Yevamos, Mikan Amar Rabbeinu Zecharon L'Racha, source number 3, Ger Shabal Hiskayer, a person who comes to convert, Modiin Lo Miktas Anashim, you first teach them some of the punishments, Shim Ba Lachzor Bo Yachzor, because if he doesn't want to do it, so then he shouldn't do it. Ushemitov Devareha Shal Rus Atalamin Masha Amar La Naomi, and we learn it from Rus, right? Rus's response to Naomi teaches us what Naomi was telling her. Right, this very interesting drasha that we make. So Rashi tells us from the Gemara, Asur lanu latzei schus l'tchum Shabbos. You're not allowed to leave a certain boundary on Saturdays. So she says in response to that, Amra la basher telchi elech. Wherever I go, wherever you go, Naomi, that's where I want to go. Meaning, I'll keep the halachos of tchum. So she says, Asur lanu hisyachin nekevim zach hashenu isha. You can't be with the opposite gender if you're not married to them. Amrala Bashar Talini Alin, wherever you feel is appropriate to sleep, that's where I'm gonna sleep. That's what it means. Amenu Muvdal Mishar Amim Bitaryag Mitzvos. Our nation is different. We have to keep a Torah. So she says, Amechami, your nation is my name, and my nation, I'm accepting the mitzvos. So then Naomi says back, Asur lanu avodas kochavim. You know you're not allowed to worship other gods, lowercase g. So she says, Elokaiach Elokai, your God is my God. Arba Misos Nimsur Lebeisin, you could get killed for doing something wrong. Bashir Tamus Yamus, whatever way you die, that's why how I want to die. Shnei Kvarim Nimsur Lebeisin, Echel and Iskalin, and Serafin, Echel and Nargun, Nakin. So there are more distinct burial plots for people that get these punishments. So she says, Amrullah Vasham Ekaver, I'll be buried wherever I have to be buried. So it really gives a much deeper, much richer understanding of this conversation when you understand that Rus is not just saying, I'll go where you go, I'll sleep where you sleep, you know, I'm going to be part of the Jewish people, right? It's not just that she's saying, I'm staying with you. She's saying, I'm committing to each of these halachos. I'm committing to these very weighty commitments, very, very serious promises she's making to Naomi at this point. And this is the sort of the conversation that some people point to, or this set of halachos, really, is the halachos that people point to in order to make the parallel to Shavuos. Because as we know, Shavuos is a time where we demarcate Zman Matan Torah Seinu. This is a time where the Torah was given, and as we spoke about last Thursday, not only when it was given, but when we were accepting it, right? Those are two sides of the same coin, but sometimes we often don't appreciate the fact that Shavuos is a time where we celebrate our own acceptance of Torah, right? That's something that cannot be overlooked. How do we know that there was a conversion process going on at Matan Torah? How do we know that Har Sinai involved more than just the acceptance of Torah, but also the acceptance of the yoke of Judaism? So says the Rambam, if you look at source number 4, the truth is that we learn all the halachos of Geirus, we learn them from pre-Matan Torah. There are three elements of a conversion. The Rambam tells us, B'shol she dvarim nechus l'Yisrael l'bris, b'mila u'tvila v'karban. Mila, right, you need a circumcision if you're a male. U'tvila, you need to go into a mikvah, and you have to bring a karban. Now, obviously, the karban is not something that we nowadays require for conversion, otherwise you can never have a convert. So really what it comes down to is the acceptance of mitzvos, which the Rambam talks about in other places, although there's a lot of controversy to what extent. And then he talks about doing the mikvah. And then if you're a man, you have to do a bris. Even if you had a circumcision in a hospital or whatever, we still require you to do a little bit of something. It's not really that big of a deal, or as big of a deal as it sounds. So the Rambam says, how do we know you have to do a bris milah? Because it says by the Karban Pesach, right? 49 days before Mount Torah, it says, V'chol ara l'chabo, that you ever call Ma'o Sam Moshe Rabbeinu Shekulim Bitlu Bris Mila B'Mitzrayim Chutz M'Shevet Levi. Okay, interesting. But what exactly does it mean that they didn't have a bris? What about Avraham and his children? So we're not going to talk about it right now. But basically, they had to do another bris. So then the Rama says, in Tfilah, what about going into a mikvah? Hey, so B'Midbar. They actually went into the Midbar. How do we know they went into a mikvah in the Midbar somehow? We learn from the pasuk, you should sanctify yourselves today. Anyone know what day that is? What day is that? Kidashtam hayom umachar. That's today, the 3rd of Sivan, the beginning of the process of preparing for the Torah. This Rambam is talking about today, part of the Shloshes Mehagbalah, which you spoke about last week. We spoke about the Hagbalah, that boundary that we create for ourselves in order to really feel that lacking, to make sure that we're not so close to the Torah that we feel that we already understand all of it. But either way, so that process of Hagbalah, that process of boundarying, is actually starting today. This is the first of the 3 days of this preparation. And part of that preparation for the Jewish people in the Midbar was going into a mikvah. The carbon, how do you know how to bring a carbon? Also, later on, the pasuk tells us, Vayishlachas nari b'nei Yisrael v'yalu alos. Al yidei kol Yisrael hikrivim. They all brought a carbon, Ola at Har Sinai, in order to finish off their Geirus process. So what we find is that both Matan Torah and the story of Rus revolve around, at least in this section of Rus, revolve around, according to Chazal, the process of Geirus, the process of conversion. And I'm not so intimately familiar with everyone's backgrounds here, but I can tell you that this is actually something that we do. This is something we do as a sponsoring rabbi, as a rabbi on the Beis Din for a Geirus. I was involved with a few of them in Kansas. Living in the Bible Belt, it's more common than you might think. We do this. We say, are you willing to accept this? You know this is really hard to do. And even here, I've gotten probably 5 or 6 people try to ask me to be their sponsoring rabbi for a conversion. And this is the first step. The first step is to tell them Judaism is hard. Judaism requires you to commit yourself in this way and that way. There are a lot of details. It's an everyday lifestyle. It's not one of these things where you sort of sign on and then, come once a year or come once a week or something like that. This is like a full lifestyle. It is going to affect everything about your life. So this is exactly what Rus is really responding to from Naomi. You know it's going to affect where you can go on Saturdays. Yeah, I know. It's going to affect, who you can be with in your bedroom. Yeah, I know. It's going to affect all these mitzvos. Yeah, I know. All the mitzvos. And the Gemara goes into more detail about what exactly you have to say, what don't you have to say. But this is the process of Geirus, and this is what some people explain is the connection between Rus and Matan Torah. There's only one problem with that. Well, there are probably other complications that people have to clarify, but for today, there's one complication that we're gonna talk about, and that is that despite the commendable, admirable, and really inspiring words of Rus in this story, it seems as if the picture that Chazal paints when it comes to the actual Matan Torah before Rus ever said these things, it sounds as if that process was a little different. It wasn't the same kind of process where, they say, all these terrible things might happen to you if you don't keep the mitzvos, and then the Jews would say, yes, we still want to do it, right? It didn't sound like that. If anything, it sounded, even in the text of the Pesukim, Nasev and Ishma, it means we don't even know about the consequences of the mitzvahs. We don't even know about the mitzvahs yet. We're still going to commit ourselves. But Chazal add another layer to it, which seems very troubling. And the truth of the Gemara says itself that it's somewhat troubling. If you look at the source number 5, which starts at the bottom but over the page, this is a famous story you might be familiar with. The Jewish people stood at the foot of the mountain. A lot of interesting things to talk about in these 3 words. Vayisyatzvu is a very interesting word. It doesn't mean vayamdu. It doesn't mean that they just stood, but they were entrenched right there. They were standing, right? Nitzavim. To be vayisyatzvu means you really, that's where you are. Right? Like Yaakov Avinu and the ladder. Right, that the ladder was mutzav artza, it was embedded in the ground. Right, there's a certain type of establishment with the word the word natzav or yatzav. So they were established betachtit hahar. The literal translation of that is probably the foot of the mountain or under the mountain at the base. Right, as we talked about last week. But the word tachtit has the word tachat. It sort of means literally to be under the mountain. So Amar Rebbe Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa. Melamed shekafa kadosh baruch hu aleihem es hahar kegigis, that Hashem turned over the mountain upon them like a barrel. He picked up the mountain and he put it on them. He put it over them. Va'amar lahem, im atem mekablam ha-Torah mutav, if you're going to accept the Torah, so good for you. V'im lav, and if you don't, sham tehe kfuraschem, this is where your burial is going to be. Wow. That sounds like a threat. That sounds like Hashem is not saying, you know, you shouldn't accept this Torah. It comes with a bunch of consequences. And the Jewish people are saying, no, we want to do it. We really want to do it. It doesn't sound like that. This does not sound like the conversation between Naomi and Rus. This sounds much more like a coercion. This sounds like Hashem is forcing them into the deal. This would be paralleled by maybe if we had a story of Naomi saying, Rus, I know you want to go back to your mother, but I'm grabbing you and I'm pulling you with me. Right, that would be presumably the parallel story that we would have in the story of Rus. And yet, that's not the story of Rus. Right? We don't have that story explaining that Rus was coerced into going with Naomi. We have the exact opposite. So how could it be that these two stories are really connected to the Matan Torah that we have? So the end of the Gemara actually has a very interesting phrase. Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Mikan Moda Rabba L'Oraisa. And if you look at the English over here, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov said, from here there is a substantial caveat to the obligation to fulfill the Torah. The Jewish people can claim that they were coerced into accepting the Torah, and it is therefore not binding. Meaning they didn't volunteer to do this. They didn't accept to do this. They didn't commit to it. They didn't devote themselves to it. They were forced into it. Now, there are probably an infinite number of ways that rabbis try to explain this Gemara, and all of them are very valuable. And one of them, I think I mentioned last week, is that the Jewish people, in the aftermath of Mitzrayim, in the aftermath of all of the miracles and all of the, you know, the Yom Suf and everything like that, they were almost forced to accept the Torah. How could they not accept the Torah from the God who just did so many things that were outside of nature, right? They saw within the last 2 months things that they had never seen before. And it was almost as if Hashem put this mountain over their heads. There is, by the way, an interesting, exceptional view of this Gemara, which says that the mountain that Hashem put over them was not Har Sinai, right? It says Hahar in the Pasuk, but it was actually, it was Har HaMoriah. It was actually the Temple Mount Har Abayis that Hashem picked up and brought all the way to Har Sinai to hold over them. Why do you have to say that? So I heard of an interesting Gemara Torah once. We say in Shabbos Miros, what does it say? Diber b'kadsho b'har hamor. What does that mean? In Shabbos Miros we say, you spoke about the holiness of Shabbos at the Mount of Myrrh. Har hamor. Right? You spoke about Shabbos. What does it mean you spoke about Shabbos? In the Esaras Adibros, we spoke about Shabbos. But how could you say you spoke about Shabbos at Har Moriah? That Har Moriah is in Yerushalayim. Right? How could we say in our Shabbos Miros that Hashem spoke about Shabbos at Har Moriah? He spoke about Shabbos at Har Sinai, not Har Moriah. So there is apparently a midrash that tells us that Hashem actually picked up Har Moriah and brought it to Har Sinai. And that's the mountain that's being talked about here. And that's what it means in Shabbos Miros. We diber b'kadsho b'har hamor. Hashem spoke about Shabbos next to Har HaMoriah because Hashem had picked up Har HaMoriah and brought it there for the Aseret HaDibros, which is a crazy midrash that requires a lot more of a drasha than we have time to give right now. But a very interesting start, very interesting food for thought there. So what is it that we're supposed to take from this contrast, presumably between the conversion that happens at Har Sinai and the conversion that happens at the scene with Naomi and Rus? Now the truth is, there's not very much we can do in order to mend this gap. But I think what we'll find is that this conflict, or this tension, I should say, when it comes to conversion, is something we find in other areas as well, that goes beyond just this Gemara and goes beyond the story of Rus. And it actually brought me to an understanding of something when I was thinking about this last night. It brought me to an understanding of something I've never really understood. And I'm sure there are a lot of other rabbinic interpretations of this Gemara too. But it brings me to a story between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. People are familiar with Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. One of the most interesting and intriguing stories that we have in the Gemara. And there are a lot of interesting stories in the Gemara. But for a number of reasons, this story always stuck with me. The story goes that one time, first it talks about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan apparently was very confident in his visual, in his what's the word? How good he looked. What am I looking for? Attractiveness, right? How attractive he was. He was very confident in it, and he was not worried that he was ever going to lose it. If you look at the beginning of the source number 6 over here, Chanina Amar Mehacha, talking about something else, Vidgul Arov Bekarav Haaretz, Ma Dagim Shabiyam, Mai Machasim Osam, V'en Ayin Harashalates Behem, Av Zaro Shal Yosef, V'en Ayin Harashalates Behem. Just like Hashem, and if you remember, Yosef says to Ephraim and Menashe that you should be like the fish in the sea and you should multiply, etc. And here the Gemara says that just like the fish are covered by the water, right, so that nothing can get to them, so too someone who's from the children of Yosef is also protected from the Ayin Hara. Now, what exactly that means, I'm not sure, but this is coming on the heels of a story about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan used to sit by the mikvah. When the women would come out of the mikvah, the Gemara tells us that he would say to the women, your children that come from, you know, you're coming out of the mikvah and going to be with your husband, your children should be as beautiful as I am. That's what Rabbi Yochanan used to say to them. You should be as beautiful as I am. And interestingly enough, I think this is the same Gemara. If you look at this Gemara Bava Metzia Pei Daled, the Gemara Bava Metzia says, hey, we have this brisa over here that lists 10 beautiful people. Rabbi Yochanan, you're not on it. How do you think you're so beautiful? So Rabbi Yochanan's response, I think it's Rabbi Yochanan or other rabbis respond for him, basically saying, oh, well, that list is only a list of people that have beards. I don't have a beard. So I'm the most beautiful of all the rabbis without beards. So it's sort of an ode to the Yeshiva University model of modern Orthodox rabbis. But not for now. Either way, so Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm beautiful. And the Gemara says back to him, aren't you worried about an Ayin Hara? You're going to talk about how beautiful you are. You're going to, you know, chas v'shalom, something's going to happen to your face. Something's going to happen to your attractiveness. You're not going to be beautiful anymore. So he says, I don't have to worry. I'm from Yosef. I'm from the tribe of Yosef. And Yosef is not affected by Ayin Hara. And he quotes this pasuk. At least this is one of the sources that he brings. He quotes this pasuk. V'yidgul arov. Yosef said to Ephraim and Menashe that they should be like fish. They will not be subjugated to the effect of the Ayin Hara. So, and on the heels of that drasha, of Rabbi Yochanan's beauty, so it goes into a really important story that really dictates the rest of Rabbi Yochanan's life, as the Gemara continues to talk about. We're not going to go through the whole thing. But Yom Achada, one day, Havakasach Rabbi Yochanan biYardina, he was bathing in the Yarden, bathing in the Jordan River. Chazye Rish Lakish, which is an interesting name given the history, but either way, he sees Rish Lakish v'shavar liyardina abasrei. He goes down to the river. Rish Lakish sees Rabbi Yochanan going to bathe. He goes down to the Jordan River and Amar le'echel and v'shavar liyardina abasrei. He steals his Rabbi Yochanan's clothing. I think that's what it means. He steals Rabbi Yochanan's clothing. Rabbi Yochanan went into the water to bathe and he steals his clothing. I don't know if people know this Gemara. This is a Gemara you have to know. This is basic Gemara psychology over here. So he goes down to the river and he steals the clothing. So says Rabbi Yochanan to Rish Lakish. He doesn't say, give me back my clothing. He says, Chel Chalo Raisa. You're a very skillful person. You should use your skills. You should use your strengths. L'oraisa. What does Oraisa mean? For Torah, right? Like a mitzvah d'oraisa. You should use your strength, you should use your skill for Torah. This is Rabbi Yochanan talking to Rish Lakish, who's stealing his clothes while he's sitting naked in the river, right? You should use your strength for Torah. So Amar Le, Shufrach Lenashi, and Rish Lakish says back to Rabbi Yochanan, your beauty, right, that's the connection, your beauty should be for women, right? You can get something like that. Amar Le, I hadarta bach yahivna lach achosi deshapir minai. If you come with me, Rish Lakish, I will guarantee you that my sister will marry you, and you'll be, and she's even more beautiful than I am. De Shapira Minai, she's even more beautiful than I am. So what happens? Kabel alei. So he accepts. So this is Rish Lakish, right? Rish Lakish, people might be familiar with the term, the name Rish Lakish. He was a thief. He wasn't a rabbi. He didn't grow up in cheder. Well, he might have actually had a yeshiva background, but then he went off the derech and became a thief, and ultimately comes back because of this story. Fine. He becomes right. Rabbi Yochanan teaches him. He teaches it himself, and he makes him into a gavra rabbi. He makes him into a great person. Yom achada, one day, there's a big tumult in the Beis Medrash, a big tumult in the study hall. When do these weapons become mekabel tuma? When can they contract impurity? So says the Gemara. So Gemara, is it from Gemara Melachtan? Is it when they're finished their construction? Right. Once you have the sword, so then it's finished. Now it's mekabel tuma. Now it's considered a real sword. But when is the finishing of the sword? So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Shemishi Yitzrafim Mekivshem, when you mold it in the oven, Rishlakish Amar Mishi Tzatzacham B'mayim. It's when you cool it off in the water afterwards. That's when it's finished. You can't use it while it's red hot. So it's really only it's only really considered a weapon once you put it into the water. So Amar Le Lista Belista Yuse Yada. Rabbi Yochanan says to Rishlakish, ah, you who has a history of being a thief, you know about your trade. You know what it means to use a weapon. I trust your judgment. That's Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish. Right? They're arguing about weapons, and Rabbi Yochanan says, well, I guess I have to trust you. You should know about weapons, because you were a thief. So he says back to him, Amalei, umahanasli. That's what you think of me, Rabbi Yochanan? You see me as a thief? That's what I'm good for, that I know about weapons. Hasam Rebbe Karili, Hacha Rebbe Karili. What good have you done for me? Right? This is sort of like a dramatic moment in the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Yochanan, that's what you think I'm good for, that I was a thief, I can teach you about weapons. What have you done for me if that's all I'm good for? They used to call me Rebbe, they used to call me Master when I was the head of the thieves. And now when I'm in this Beis Medrash, they call me Rebbe too. I haven't gained anything from this position. I haven't gained anything from this transition. So he says back to him, you know, he was very insulted by this phrasing, very insulted by this statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan could have just said, yeah, you know, you're right. I guess you're right. But no, he says, no, you're a thief. And that's why you should know. So says Rabbi Yochanan back to Rish Lakish, Amar le, ahanai lach da akravinach tachas kanfei shechina. You know how I helped you, you know how I benefited you, because I brought you under the wings of Hashem's spirit. I brought you into spirituality, I brought you close to Hashem. That's how I benefited you. The continuation of this story is very sad, because Rish Lakish gets very sick over what Rabbi Yochanan says, and ultimately he gets so sick, I'm sure there might have been other corroborating illnesses that were going along with this, his emotional distraughtness was coupled with whatever was going on, and he actually passed away. Rish Lakish died, and Rabbi Yochanan could not get over this. Rabbi Yochanan couldn't get over it, that he lost his chavrusa, and he goes to, and they give him a replacement. The replacement's no good, which we talk about a different time. But then he goes to the kever, he goes to the burial spot of Rish Lakish, and he tries to revive Rish Lakish. And there's a whole story there, and he couldn't do it. And ultimately, Rabbi Yochanan gets so sick. He gets so sick that he can't live anymore, because he can't live without his chavrusa, Rish Lakish. And ultimately, Rabbi Yochanan's sister davens that Rabbi Yochanan should pass away because of how painful it is, and he actually dies also. So both Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan die from the result of this conversation, which is an unbelievably sad story. But and it's even crazier given the fact that Rabbi Yochanan had a bunch of sons who also died, and Rabbi Yochanan used to encourage people after that, as opposed to here where he couldn't deal with it. But all for another time. This story, as I said to you before, is just unbelievable. But there's one part of it that really doesn't make much sense, and I've never really understood it. Rabbi Yochanan says, you're a thief, you were a thief, so you should know about weaponry. And Rish Lakish's response is, I don't understand, you think you've really done that much good for me? When I was a thief, they called me Rebbe, and now when I'm a rabbi, they call me Rebbe. I don't understand. Rish Lakish is saying that there's no difference between the Rebbe of thieves and the Rebbe of Torah, Of course there's a big difference. What kind of response is Rish Lakish giving to Rabbi Yochanan? What good have you done for me? I was a master of thieves and now a master of Torah. Well, that's the difference. Right? That's obviously the difference. You were a master of thieves, but thieves is not a good thing. Now you're a master of Torah. That's a good thing. So what's the whole point? And I can't tell you that this suggestion is the correct suggestion, but it's something that I came up with when thinking about Ruth and Naomi. And I think there's there's credence to it. It seems to be that the whole story of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish goes back to that river. It could go back to that river. What is Rabbi Yochanan's statement to Rish Lakish at the river? He says, Chel chal oraisa. You should use your skills for Torah. What does it mean you should use your skills for Torah? On the one hand, you can see it in a very positive way, and you can say, well, what that means is that Rish Lakish is a very capable person, a very competent person, a very cunning person. He should use that intelligence for something good and not for something like this. The other way you could say it is that the Jewish people could use Rish Lakish, right? The Jewish people could really benefit from his insights, meaning he's had experience in a realm that people don't really have. And therefore, he should join our ranks so that we can benefit from what Rish Lakish has to offer. And I know there's that those two possibilities are very subtle, but I think you'll see what I'm getting at as we go into the next conversation. What happens? They're talking about weaponry, and Rabbi Yochanan says, well, you should know you're a thief. And all of a sudden, a light bulb goes off in Rish Lakish's head. And he says, wait a second. You think that our chavrusa, you think that this conversation is for, is this whole relationship that we have is all so that I can discern for you certain character traits, certain aspects of Torah, meaning that your purpose in bringing me here maybe was not for altruistic motivations, but maybe it was for utilitarian purposes. Maybe you're using me for the elucidation of Torah. Maybe there's a certain utility to my being in this Beis Medrash. And it's not just because it's the right thing to do. And I think that's what he says. Hasam Rebbe Karuli, Hacha Rebbe Karuli. If the whole point is utility, if the whole point is mastery, so then I was very utilitarian as a thief. I mastered a whole skill set when I was a thief. And here too, I mastered a whole skill set as a rabbi. And Rish Lakish is saying back to Rabbi Yochanan, the point of me coming here is chas v'shalom. It's not about utility. It's not about benefit. It's not about gain. It's not about ulterior motives. It's not about mastery over a certain type of thing or a certain type of information. It should be because it's purposeful. And that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan's response to him is afterwards. You're right. That's not why I brought you here. That's not what I meant. Rabbi Yochanan saying to Rish Lakish, I'm not saying that the whole purpose of our relationship is utilitarian. That's not what I meant. The reason I brought you, Ahanai lach to akrevinach tachas kanfei hashchina. The reason I brought you here has nothing to do with being a master over anything, with nothing to do with utilitarian reasons, nothing for ulterior motives. Chas v'shalom. The reason that I brought you here is to bring you under kanfei hashchina. But it was too late, because he had already said at the beginning of their relationship, Chel chal araisa, that your strength, your skills should be used for Torah. Which maybe, and I don't want to read too much into it because that gets into dangerous territory, but maybe Rish Lakish was thinking in his mind this whole relationship, is that why I'm here? Is that why Rabbi Yochanan brought me here? To give more insight that other people can't give, but beyond that there's no real purpose? And then Rabbi Yochanan says this line, you were a thief, you know what you're talking about. And then Rish Lakish couldn't deal with it anymore. Over there I had a mastery, over here I have a mastery of the whole point is utility, so then what am I gaining from doing this? I was already mastery of something else. I already had that utilitarian significance. So why would I come over here just for another utilitarian reason? And that's what Rabbi Yochanan tries to convince him afterwards. No, that's not what I meant. I meant that I brought you to Hashem. That's the whole purpose I brought you here. Not so for the utilitarian reasons. And I think when you think about it in that way, there are two ways that anybody can come to Torah. And there are two ways that anybody can really relate to Judaism and relate to the benefits of Judaism. on the one hand, you can relate to it with ulterior motives, with the perspective that there's what to be gained from it. And you have all your Kiruv professionals that tell you that Shabbos is important because it's a day to get away from your cell phones. And Shabbos is important because it's a day to spend time with your family. And davening is important because it's a time where you get to connect with, you know, meditate and think about life. And there are all these utilitarian purposes to life, utilitarian benefits to doing the mitzvot and to being Jewish. But when it comes down to it, the main reason that we should be Jewish is to be tachas kanfei Hashchina. It's not for any utility, it's not for any benefit, it's not so that we can gain any particular advantage in life. Those things happen naturally. But what we should really be, committing ourselves to Torah for is for the purposes of doing the right thing. And I think if we look back at a moment, at the back and forth that Rashi tells us is going on with Rus, we not only learn about the halachos of Geirus, we don't only learn about the conversation that has to take place before someone becomes a Geir, but what we learn about is the purpose for Rus's commitment to Torah. She says to her, you know, on Saturdays, you're not going to be able to walk out. You're not going to be able to go do things. It's going to be a disadvantage to you. It's going to not only be not helpful, it's going to be hurtful. You're not going to be able to go get groceries on Saturdays. You're not going to be able to drive to the store. You're not going to be able to do all those things you love to do. She says, wherever you go, that's where I want to go. If you're not going to go there, I'm not going to go there. And she says, you know, you're going to limit yourself. You're not going to be able to spend time with other people in the same way maybe you did if you were not Jewish, right? You can't lay down with other people if they're not your husband. She says, fine, even though there's a lack of utility, even though there's a lack of benefit there, I still want, even though it's a disadvantage, I still want it. Share talin alin. And she says, you know, it means you have to throw away all the other avenues of religiosity. You have to get rid of all your idols. You have to get rid of all your other belief systems. It's another restriction. It's a disadvantage. She says, yes, I'm willing to do that. And it goes on and on to talk about how she's willing to take all these sacrifices on, even though they're to her own living detriment. It doesn't go through the mitzvah of positive things that can benefit you. It only goes through, Naomi only goes through all the things that can disadvantage a person. And I think in that way, what we understand from Rus is that she serves as a contrast to what some people believe is the experience of the Jewish people. When you have this Gemara in Shabbos Peches, the Gemara that tells us all about the Jewish people being coerced into accepting the Torah, what you get the impression is that the way that we have to accept the Torah is blind faith. We just have to do it because Hashem forced us to do it. And this is actually, as Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov says, a Jewish people have a caveat to say we were forced into it. And in response to that possible response, to that interpretation of Matan Torah, we say, you know where we have to, how we counter that argument? We counter that argument by telling you about Rus. We counter that argument by talking to you about how much of a sacrifice Rus took upon herself from leaving her homeland, going to Eretz Yisrael, which may or may not have worked out for her, going with Naomi to say that I'm willing to take these sacrifices even to my own disadvantage, even when it's not utilitarian, even when the only reason I'm doing it is because it's the right thing. And I think we learn from Rus the ability, the benefit of committing to ourselves, not really the benefit, the unconditional way to commit ourselves regardless of the benefits. If you look at source number 7, so source number 7 is a medrash that talks about Avram Avinu, but look who's talking. Source number 7, Amar Lahem Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Who's Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish? That's Rish Lakish. The same person who says to Rabbi Yochanan that my whole purpose of coming here is to be part of a Klal Yisrael, to be part of Tachas Kan Veshkina, not for the sake of calling me Rebbe, not for some utilitarian purpose. And he says the following, Chaviv Hager, now Reish Lakish was not a convert, he was a Baal Tshuva. Same idea though. Chaviv Hager lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu min osen ochlosin she'amdu al Sinai. The people who convert to Judaism are more beloved to Hashem than those who stood at the foot of Mount Sinai, right? Shamdu al Har Sinai. It's interesting. It doesn't say foot of Har Sinai. But either way, so lama shekol oso ochlosin ilule shireo kolos falapini barakim vahari maroshim ukol shofros lo kiblo lemachos shemayim. If it wasn't for the thunder, the lightning, the flames, the smoke, the sounds of the shofar, they would have never accepted the Torah. Right? Rish Lakish is basically saying that they also accepted the Torah out of coercion. They accepted it out of some kind of ulterior purpose, to not be, you know, intimidated, or as the Gemara says in Shabbos, to not be coerced into it. Vizeh, and this ger, this convert, lo ra echad mikulam, he didn't see any of these. Uba umashlim atzmo laKadosh Baruch Hu. Very interesting wording. He makes himself mashlim atzmo laKadosh Baruch Hu. It could be he makes shalom, with peace with Hashem, or it means mashlim atzmo. He completes himself with Hashem's presence. V'kibel olav olmachl shemayim yesh chaviv mizeh. Is there anyone more beloved than a person who, out of no conditions otherwise, out of complete voluntarism, completely throws themselves into Hashem, mashlim atzmo laKadosh Baruch Hu, completes himself by accepting Hashem and accepting the yoke of heaven. That's the kind of convert that we're looking for. We're not looking for someone who is awed and wowed and sees the benefit or is coerced into Judaism. We're looking for the person who's willing to do it for the right reasons, for that relationship with Hashem, for that relationship with the mitzvos, for accepting yourself without conditions into this lifestyle. And it's interesting, I don't know if sometimes she's on here. Let's see, I don't see her here. But I got a present, I think it was Hanukkah, that Leah Unger gave me a book. A very interesting book by Tzvi Reisman. I'm not familiar with his other works or anything like that. But it's called The Hebrew Months in the Shmona Esrei. It's a fascinating premise. The premise of the book is based on Sfas Emes and other Hasidic ideas that every month correlates to another one of the middle brachas in Shmona Esrei. As we know, originally Shmona Esrei had 18 brachas, that's why it's called Shmona Esrei. And the first three are for praising Hashem, the last three are for thanking Hashem, and the middle 12 are for asking Hashem for something. And the book goes through each one of the months and sees how each of the months correlates to each one of these brachas. So what's the bracha for Sivan? The bracha for Sivan is Ala Tzadikim. And if you read the words, Zoras number 8, Ala Tzadikim, V'al Chassidim, V'al Zikneam Chabeis Yisrael, V'al Pletas Sofreim, V'al Geirei HaTzedek. That along with the list of all of these other prominent people, the Tzadikim, the Chassidim, the Zakenim, and nonetheless, it includes within that Geirei Tzedek. What does a Geirei Tzedek have to do with this? They're not leaders of the Jewish people. You think of tzaddikim, someone to look up to, a mentor, a chassid, someone to look up to model themselves out, the Ziknei Yisrael, the leaders of the Jewish people, Pletas Sofrim, and then Geirei Tzedek, people that converted to Judaism. The bracha talks about conversion to Judaism. Va'aleinu, and then it says us. Why exactly? Us is in there. Yemu rachamech Hashem lakeinu, v'tein tzach ato v'chol, and then it lists these words, l'chol habotchim b'shimcha be'emes. What does that mean? What would the bracha be missing if it didn't have that word emes? L'chol habotchem b'shimcha, everyone who believes in your name. Well, you could have many reasons to believe in Hashem. Maybe it gives me a nice community to believe in Hashem. Maybe giving a nice drasha will give me some kavod, give me some honor. They'll call me Rebbe if I believe in Hashem. So he says, no, the bracha doesn't say that. Habotchem b'shimcha be'emes. You're really believing in Hashem for Hashem's sake. You're into Judaism. You're into the Torah for the sake of the Torah, not for any other ulterior motives. That's Simcha Alkeinu b'Shimcha L'chol Abotchem b'Shimcha be'emes, specifically for the right reasons. V'lo nevosh ki b'chavatachim, won't be embarrassed if anything bad happens because we believe in Hashem, even to our own detriment, even to the nevosh, even to the embarrassment. We're still going to believe in Hashem, and this is exactly what I think. One of the messages is that we can get from the Megillah of Rus. The Megillah of Rus is to teach us that there are two ways to accept the Torah on Shavuos. There's a reason to accept the Torah because that's what everybody else is doing, or that's, you know, going to give you some respect to other people, or you can tell your parents that you went to a shir, or you can tell, you know, other people that you did this or you did that. But the reason that you should learn Torah, the reason you should connect to Torah, the reason that we're accepting the Torah on Shavuos is not for any ulterior motives. The reason that we accept Judaism just like Rus did is because even at the detriment of all of these things, even at the detriment of all the things that might come along with being a subservient and committed Jew, we're nonetheless going to commit ourselves to Torah. That's the contrast between the story of the Gemara, of how the Jewish people might have accepted the Torah, and the story of how Rus accepted the Torah. And we remind ourselves of that on Shavuos to make sure that our acceptance, our re-acceptance of the Torah on Shavuos is more in line with Rus than it is in line with this Gemara in Shabbos. And I think it's interesting, just I love singing the song in Shavuos. I don't know if people know this song. It's an old song. There's actually a big machlokas about who wrote the song and where the words come from. The song is called Kad Yasvan. I don't know if people know the song. I don't know if I'm gonna, it's actually a long song, believe it or not, based on how many words there are. You think it's a short song, but it's relatively long. I think it has four parts to it. They say that the Vilna Gaon came up with the words. That's the story, at least. There's proof from old Vilna Siddurim that he wrote the words. Some people say it comes from the Zohar, but we have many texts of the Zohar, and it's not in there. But the words are, Kad Yasvan Yisrael v'askin b'simchas haTorah, when the Jewish people sit and they learn the joy of Torah, Kut shabrichu omer l'famalia delay, Hashem says to his angels, Chazu, chazu, bonai, 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 chavivai. Look at my beautiful children. My beloved children, they have so many things to worry about, so many other things that are coming to their detriment. And nonetheless, ask in Bechedvasadili, instead of worrying about all those other things, during all those difficulties, they still engage with my Torah. They still learn all of the things that I've taught them, despite all their difficulties, despite all the other things they have to worry about. And this is another, sort of another layer to this song that you can understand, that the Mishtakim Mitzara Delon, despite all the difficulties that might come along with it, they nonetheless commit themselves to the Torah, they commit themselves to their religiosity, even given the circumstances. So that's a nice song. If you haven't heard it, you can look it up online. In English, it's probably K-A-D-Y-A-S-V-U-N or something like Kad Yasvun. You got to spell it with a S, because otherwise you're not going to find the song. That's how it's sung. But either way, that's another layer to this. But I think that's one wrinkle that maybe people don't understand or don't always appreciate about the story of Rus. Of course, we didn't go through the entire story and all the ins and outs of the narrative, but this is one lesson we can take from Rus, that her commitment to Torah was without any ulterior motives. It was even accepting upon herself, as Rashi tells us, the detriment of being Jewish. Instead of going back to her non-Jewish home and having all these luxuries, she gave it all up for the sake of being Jewish, and we remind ourselves of that in light of the contrasting Gemara that tells us that the Jewish people accepted it with coercion. So hopefully we all work on ourselves. It's easier said than done, but we all work on ourselves to make sure that our commitment to Torah this Shavuos is in line with Rus, and it's not only limited to the benefits that we can get from being Jewish and the Gemara that tells us that the Jewish people had ulterior motives. So thank you all for joining me. And thank you to Gil and Rebecca Feldman, Mirtz Hashem. This learning that we've had has been an Eloi Neshama for Rebecca's grandfather, Reb Reuben Ben Svi Hirsch Bodek, for his 10th Yahrzeit. So thank you all. Thanks for coming on. Everyone should have a wonderful Shavuos.
Thank you.
For some reason,
you
are welcome. Thank you.
Thank you,
Robin. Thank you.
Have a wonderful Yontif.